If you've ever typed the words Jurassic Park 3 into a Google search, you've probably read the stories about the script being tossed out 5 weeks before the start of filming. You've heard about the production beginning without an ending to the film, and from the conversations you'll hear in this podcast, that seems to be definitely true. So before we get into the interviews with the talented crew and artists that worked on the pre-production for JP3, let's briefly discuss what led to the film. Director Joe Johnson at first expressed interest in directing The Lost World. Spielberg ultimately directed it himself, but when it came time for the third film, Spielberg was focused on AI, which was essentially like a film child of Stanley Kubrick. With AI being Spielberg's first screenplay credit in 2 decades, his time was understandably devoted to bringing that world to life. With Spielberg not being on set very often, this certainly allowed for Joe Johnston to make the film his own. But there was obviously a lot of pressure placed on him from the studio, and just the fact he's taking over a very successful franchise. The studio had set a release date of July 18, 2001, and from what I've gathered, Universal had no interest in delaying that release date. So back in 1999, Craig Rosenberg wrote the first draft. This story focused on a group of teenagers stranded on the island, Alan Grant somehow leading them to safety. I've asked just about everyone if they have any version of the script and if they're willing to share. So far, no luck. But it's these earlier drafts that are constantly discussed by fans as a way of seeing what the film might have been. And in the end, with all the setbacks and troubles, the question is whether JP3 is a better film than it would have been had a lesser, experienced director been in control. Since I was unable to locate this earlier draft of the script, the closest I was able to come to getting an idea of the full scope of the film was talking to the storyboard artist and the concept artist, all that were on board well before production began.
My name is Ricardo Delgado. I was a production illustrator / concept artist on Jurassic Park 3 and proud of it. I just got a call one day from Dave Lowry. He's one of the storyboard artists on the show. And I'd work with Dave on True Lies, and we just knew each other very well back then. And so I came in and I showed my stuff to Joe Johnston, who, you know, come on, he's Joe Johnston, right? He's done a couple of things, you know? And so for me to meet as just some kid that grew up on Star Wars to meet the guy that designed the Millennium Falcon, you know, was pretty damn cool. But having said all that, I played it cool myself. You know, I've just learned to be professional, and, you know, he just looked over my stuff and just kind of said, well, you know, we'll see how it works out. And a few weeks later, I got a call from Larry Franco, the producer, and negotiated a deal, and I just came in and started working.
So were you working from a script or an outline? How does that work?
I never worked from a script. I was on really early on, and I worked from a treatment, an outline. And it was about 20 pages long, if that. And so it was super, super early in the process.
What was it like working with storyboard artist Dave Lowry?
Dave is a genius in his own right. And he is one of Steven's guys in terms of storyboarding, and if not the guy. And, you know, he and the S-Man just kind of have this connectivity that you just can't, you know, you can't explain or sort of talk about. It just kind of happens between a storyboard artist and a director. And he thinks like Spielberg, and Spielberg thinks like him. And you know, even though he's working for Joe on this project, of course, like that, Dave's sensibilities are all over this picture, clearly.
Since you were on the project so early, what can you tell us about the dynamics of working with Joe and production designer Ed Vero?
One of the things that I sort of talked about with Joe and Ed Vero, the production designer, who is also, again, you know, just an amazing dude and part of Steven Spielberg's sort of artistic lineage. Joe Johnston sketches, and like the guy's an incredible artist himself. And so, you know, he and Ed were, you know, honestly coming by all the time. I was kind of in the middle of the art department between sort of Ed's office was way down to my right, and Joe's offices were way down to the left. And so they were always meeting. So invariably they would cross my path, if you will. So, you know, and I was just having so much fun. I was just drawing. And I would sense them come by, and then they would stop and they would look, and then they would just keep going. You know, And same thing, sometimes they would both come by, they would stop, they would look, they'd keep going. And sometimes they would tap me on the shoulder and, you know, I'd turn around and we'd talk. But I was just early on Mr. Idea guy. Like, what can we do to make this stuff, you know, as fun as a story as possible? Because this was the first one not directed by Steven, right? And so that was kind of, you know, it was kind of a big deal, you know? And yet, you know, Spielberg's imprints or an influencer, you know, all over the story. And it was just cool, man. It was just a lot of fun, you know, working with a bunch of great artists on a fun story. And I was really proud of the film when it came out.
Steven Spielberg not directing the third film obviously sets it apart from the other two. As executive producer, his time on set was most likely limited. I asked production designer Ed Vero about this. Was Spielberg on set often? Like, was it common for him to be talking with you about JP3 and what you were working on?
Yeah, certainly he was, you know, he didn't come over, you know, we didn't see him come over a lot because he was doing, he was very involved in AI at the time. But I know that Joe would take some of my illustrations, you know, like, you know, sometimes I would just do little rough thumbnail sketches about ideas I had, and I put them up on my bulletin board, and then Joe would come and say, here, I'm taking these.
You had worked with Spielberg and some of his team previously, so, you know, when JP3 was going into pre-production, were you automatically involved?
It's kind of embarrassing, but I was working on my agent at the time, and I won't name them, but I had said, I know this is coming up drastically. And I know Steven, and I know Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall. I mean, you know, I sort of was very involved with in the early 80s with, you know, the Raiders movies and E.T. and all of that. And so it was kind of, you know, part of the Spielberg family. So I knew it was coming up. I knew Joe Johnston. We'd worked together in London on the second Raiders. You know, we knew each other. And so I said, just, you know, just track this and, you know, just keep me informed to my agent. Well, the next thing I find, I'm doing a little TV pilot and I find out that that they've hired somebody else. And I called up my agent and said, well, you know, what the, and they said, well, we're sorry, you know, and I think they were just kind of, you know, kind of blown me off. Well, about a week later, because I had friends who were working on it, I got a call from somebody who was working on it, said they just let the production designer go. Joe Johnston's not happy with him and they're looking for somebody else. So I called my agent again and I said, I want a meeting with Joe. And I had already tentatively, I was supposedly going to be actually doing another project with Fox, but I hadn't really signed. It was just in the works. And my agent said, well, no, I can't do that because, you know, you're already lined up with this other thing. And I said, well, look, you either do it or I'll call Kathleen Kennedy myself and I'll do it and you'll be fired. So what do you want to do? And so he said, okay. So they got me the meeting and I met with Joe and Larry Franco and we talked about it and stuff. And I said, I really would like to do the show. And I mean, I need to, unfortunately, because I've got this other obligation with Fox, and I need to let them know one way or another in the next couple of days, am I going to work on their show or am I going to, you know, step in and do this? And so they, you know, since Joe and I knew each other and stuff, he opted to have me come work on it.
Ricardo, working with Ed and Joe, were you having a bunch of meetings, like just coming up with ideas for this script, maybe different elements that never made it into the final cut?
I think the only thing sort of we kind of bantered about was sort of the idea early on. Well, like, does the dad make it through the story? You know, does the dad sacrifice himself? Because a treatment is different from a script, right? Like, you can work from that and it can be flexible at that point. But I definitely remember that conversation. And I do remember sort of volunteering the idea that, hey, maybe this one of the Mercs kills a baby Spinosaurus, and that's what pisses off the parent Spinosaurus, and that's why it pursues them through the whole story, you know. But you only have so much time, even though it's a 2-hour feature, there's only so much time that you have with these kind of pictures to formulate that kind of stuff into the story structure, you know.
Okay, so I know you don't work from a script, but is there any chance you have an outline or anything from one of the earlier drafts?
Most of the scripts that I work from on different shows, I don't have.
That's a pretty common response when I ask anyone if they still have the script. I do still ask because eventually I will find it. Maybe not the original Craig Rosenberg script from 99, but some version of an early draft. Dave Lowry's name comes up quite often when talking about the art of Jurassic Park 3. Dave, you first started working with Spielberg over 20 years ago. Can you think back to that first meeting with him?
It was a total fluke, right? I was working I was in college. A friend of a friend told me that, I've got a friend who's like an assistant editor at George Lucas's publishing place. And it was this building across from the entrance of Universal. It was called the Egg Company, and it was this beautiful refurbished old building that looks just like what his Skywalker sound looks like. I mean, it was kind of, I think that was one of his first, you know, test cases for, maybe he already built Skywalker by then, I don't remember. But in there they did all of the publishing for George and all of his books, like the art of Star Wars and the, you know, the manuals and the novelizations. And they had they needed somebody to ink coloring books, you know, with this comic book guy was drawing the pencils and I was inking them, and it was for Empire Strikes Back, which hadn't come out yet, you know, and so that was this kooky job I had when I was in school. And one day the editor, the gal calls, the main editor of those books, right? She calls and she goes, George just sold a script to Steven Spielberg, and it's called Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they're looking for storyboard artists, and so we threw your name in the hat, and the interview is tomorrow, you know, and I'm like freaking out, I don't know what to do, and I hadn't done any storyboards yet, right, and I'm in school 3 semesters worth, and so I bring like a roll of life drawings and a bunch of sketchbooks, and I go into the trailer. Amblin wasn't built yet, and so Steven was in a trailer that they lent him. So I go into the trailer, and every hot shot in L.A. is in there. Every hot shot storyboard guy is in there. You know, there's Ed Vero ended up getting the job, Rick Hoberg, Bill Stout, Dave Stevens, all of these dudes, you know, that I later on realized these were like, you know, the comic book and the illustration royalty in Hollywood in LA. And so I'm sitting there with my dipshit, you know, samples of nothing. And so it's my turn, and I go in there, and Ron Cobb, who God bless him, just passed away, was an early kind of art genius, you know, and was sort of Steven's art consultant for the time. And was helping Steven look at all the books, and he could discern, as Steven could as well, you know, who could storyboard and who could do the job or whatever. And so I lay this stuff out, and Steven's looking at it, and he doesn't know what to make of this goofball, you know, string bean with long hair and red Converse, and, you know, and Ron Cobb says, well, you know, he can draw, you know, give him a shot or whatever. And so Steven gives me an assignment, and it's like a half page description of a scene. And it's a scene where he's in that camp, like that Bedouin camp, and he's looking for stuff in a tent, and he comes out and he cracks a guy, you know, guy comes up and at him, and he jumps on the guy's horse and he rides off down the road. And there's all of these guys lining the road, and they all stand up as he goes past him on the horse. It's just a beautiful scene. And so I was supposed to storyboard that, and I go home and I drew like probably the worst, you know, 3 or 4 storyboards you've ever seen in your life. They look like, you know, they were so stiff and like I etched them in cement or something, you know, so they were horrible. So I didn't get the job. So anyway, that was the first time I met Steven. So then later, I, you know, later on then, you know, on Jurassic, I, I mean, I, I, I got lucky on Jurassic when we went off to do Hook. He picked me to be, you know, the storyboard guy to go with him on Hook. So there I became kind of his wrist man, as they used to say in the old days. So
you also worked on the first Jurassic Park. What was it like in the early days of CGI? You know, you're working on this film where you suddenly get to experience a film featuring, you know, CGI dinosaurs, like completely revolutionizing the film industry.
Came back to do Jurassic, now the first one, and they had T-Rex shot where they, you know, they went out the back door and there in Marin where ILM was at the time, and just took, they got, you know, put a 35 millimeter on the ground and took a picture of a tree maybe 30, 50 feet away from them, from the camera. And in that shot, they animated a T-Rex walking right by camera, right? A full-size T-Rex, all CG, perfect, spot on, perfect, you know? And that was like the biggest aha moment, I think, in my professional life. And the story goes, right, that, but when Tippett saw it, you know, the story goes, he turned to Steven and he says, I think I just became extinct, because doing all of his stop motion. But it was like, they did what? How? It's a what? How they, you know, it was like, it was kind of unfathomable, you know? And I remember one of the movies with Steven are very demanding. You know, there's a lot, as a storyboard guy, you know, you're one of a team, in the art department, and as movies go, you know, the art department designs the world while you design, you know, what they're going to shoot in that world.
What's the comparison between Joe and Steven when it comes to storyboarding?
Like Steven, you know, Joe storyboards the thing first and you redo it and maybe add an angle, add an insert, add some stuff to it, or come up with a whole beat and try and sell him on it. And then, you know, he'll add that. But Joe's boards are phenomenal. The guy draws just ridiculously well, you know, and in ink and straight ahead in ink. So yeah, he would probably drew pretty much the whole movie out ahead of time.
Without a finished and approved script, were you basically just storyboarding ideas or sequences that you knew were in the film regardless?
So Joe knew what was in it and what was going to be in it, you know, so you can start by you know, drawing those scenes and generally like the what they call the set piece scenes, you know, so those are the most complicated scenes effects wise, you know, so you get everybody's eyes on the director's vision early on, and they know what's coming, you know, even if it were to bend a little bit this way or that, they have a pretty good idea that, you know, the thing drops in through the roof, kicks butt and jumps out the door, you know, they have an idea of what it's going to be.
In some of the earlier scripts and from talking to you, I know there was a sequence involving a group of teens on dirt bikes. They come across these bikes and before you know it, they're being chased by like a pack of raptors. What can you tell us about that?
There was a whole chunk in the middle that had a big chase sequence with where the you know, our explorers end up finding the old engine, you know, garage, so to speak, and they find some old ATVs and stuff, and somehow 10 years later the gas is still good, and the raptors show up, and then they have a chase out across the, you know, the Lucas Ranch in Hawaii, and they, you know, managed to get away. And we never were really able to work that out.
And the kid is being chased by the velociraptors, and he gets on a dirt bike and is racing through the jungle and ends up going through a field not too dissimilar from the raptors in the grass in Lost World. He's going through this field with the velociraptors chasing after him full tilt, and he's going wide open on this dirt bike, sees the cliff coming, gets to the cliff, goes off the edge of the cliff and pulls the hang glider out of the backpack as a raptor jumps. I think I drew it so that a raptor jumps after him, and actually the raptor lands on the saddle of the bike and takes it down to the bottom or what have you. But for some reason, it didn't make it in.
That's incredible. It's easy to look at a storyboard of an unshot scene and think how amazing it would be to see that in the film. Not so sure about the raptor riding the bike down, but who doesn't love a good bike chase in the jungle? I'm just wondering, like, what's it like to see your work become a reality and be a part of the film? Because you spent a lot of time simply on things that never made it into the film, but there's quite a bit that you did. What's it like to see that in the final film?
You realize that, you know, everything you've been working on for the last year, as well as, you know, 150 other people have been working hard to, it all comes down to right there in front of the camera at that moment, you know, boom, action, it starts. And then it becomes a real thing. And it always looks much better than the boards, for one, because it's so much fuller. And it becomes, really admired directors for this, the fact that it becomes a much bigger job at that point than it had been up until that moment, you know, because now everything's on the line.
On your first viewing of the film, do you remember what you thought, like what your first reaction was?
So, yeah, when I saw it, yeah, I was really happy how it all came together. There were some beautiful scenes in it, and I really remember really enjoying it. I thought Joe did a wonderful job.
I'm Gabriel Hardman. I was a storyboard artist on Jurassic Park 3. I'm pretty sure that I was contacted by Dave Lowry, who is you know, another storyboard artist, very well known, worked on the previous Jurassic Park movies and worked with Spielberg a lot. And they were looking for to bring on somebody else because the movie was ramping up. Although in the context of Jurassic Park 3, it wasn't like they had a script. And it was, and I was on there quite some time before, you know, before we had like a sort of workable draft of the script. But I believe it was Dave Lowry. I must have been recommended to him from another person. I've not had an agent or anything since my earliest days. And this is Jurassic Park 3 was close to my earliest days. But I was really like the third in line storyboard artist back then, behind Dave and Rodolfo DiMaggio.
So what did it mean to be working on a Jurassic film? You were pretty young at the time. Did you have any love for the previous films?
For me, I love the first Jurassic Park. It came out when I was 18 years old, and I lived in New York City, and I went to see it on an important day for me, because it was the same day that I got the first job I ever had drawing a comic for Marvel Comics. And so I met with that editor and got the job, and then went directly to the movie, and I loved the movie. And and I'm a huge fan of Spielberg, and I love the kind of, you know, just the storytelling and the, you know, and just the fun kind of classic Spielberg feel to the movie. So coming into Jurassic Park 3, it was something that I was excited about. It sounded fun to me.
So depending who I talked and what time they came on board, it's almost like they were working on completely different films. Do you recall what you were working on? Anything that maybe didn't make it into the film?
It was initially some material with the kid on his own out in the jungle, which I'm pretty sure isn't in the movie at all, or wasn't, you know, didn't survive. And then I know I went on to work on some Spinosaurus stuff with it in the river, and the attack on a boat in a river. I definitely remember that they had developed a lot of material before this, trying to just find their way through big action sequences and story beats with the boards. And that, you know, I remember, a big wall of stuff that Rodolfo had worked on for the ending, with, you know, military coming in and blowing away all the dinosaurs, and, a much more kind of like militaristic, aggressive ending that I thought was kind of repugnant.
Hearing about the film taking a pause to rework the script, during that time, what were you doing? Were you, you know, simply brainstorming?
Basically, I came on, and I was on for quite a while of just working, trying to develop sequences before there was any real workable draft of the script that anybody was happy with. And at that point, Joe was off struggling with the script, struggling with the things that, that were problems with the bigger picture of the movie, as I remember it, you know, that's a pretty, that's a kind of hearsay thing from my point of view.
Of all the people I was able to speak with about pre-production, if anyone could tell me a bit more about the script and what was going on while it was being reworked, it was DP Shelley Johnson.
I was doing TV, and you know, they were starting another TV project over at DreamWorks that they just weren't including me on, and I didn't know why. It turns out they had other plans for me, and they didn't tell me about any of it. They told Larry Franco to call me. That's the first I heard about it. But I was kind of sweating it out, because I was really kind of wondering, you know, why I wasn't being hired, and they never once hinted, you know, that it was because they, you know, they wanted to see if they could put me and Joe together, so I'm glad that it transpired that way, and definitely, you know, it was a solid opportunity that I wanted to make the most of, for sure.
Okay, Shelley, so being new to big budget films, it must have been a constant struggle to not have a finished script, right?
When I had my interview with Joe, you know, I hadn't read the script. Once I got hired, they still wouldn't give me a script. And I didn't even read the script until my first day on the job. And even then, I had to read it in the lobby of the right outside Joe's door, in full view of the receptionist. That kind of was the receptionist for both Larry and Joe had the same receptionist who was there, and she had to watch me. I'd read the script, sit there in the chair, read the script, give it back to her. And then we didn't have copies of the script. And so I remember getting to the end of it. I remember reading this script and thinking, okay, that's big. Okay, that's bigger. Okay, that's even bigger. Wow. And I'm like going on and on. And getting through the script, and then the production manager walked by as I was just finishing. I was just kind of sitting there and in a daze. And the production manager looked at me and said, "Shelley, you look like you just read the script." I said, "Yes, I did." I could tell by that 1,000-yard stare you've got. Because it's just the scale of it. And because you get to the end of the script, you read the script, and of course you read the script like you want to be entertained by it. Like you read it like an audience member. Then you get to the end of it, and you start to ask yourself the question, well, how am I going to do any of that? You know, and the list of questions and the list of what I needed answers to was longer than I had ever imagined it would be. It's a lot of discussion that goes into it, and because what you find on these movies is that there's a lot of departments. You know, there's the special effects department and visual effects and me and that all have to kind of make things work.
Shelley, this was your first of many films you've done with Joe Johnston. What was it like working with him for the first time? You two clearly work well together, but was that instantaneous?
Yeah, he wasn't super outgoing with information. It wasn't like he sat down and said, "Shelley, here's what I want you to do." I mean, he would answer any question. He would listen to any pitch from me. But there wasn't a lot of, "Hey, Shelley, I want to talk to you about this sequence. I mean, let's sit down and really talk about this." And in fact, to the point where I was kind of wondering about it. I saw him talking a lot to the production designer, Ed Vero, but not a lot to me. And so I even went to Ed one day and said, "Hey, look, you know, here's a dynamic that I'm seeing. Is, you know, exactly what I described." And Ed said, "Well, you know, one thing that I think is," he said, "I noticed a big change in Joe when I could make him laugh. Try to make him laugh, for starters. Try to find his funny bone." He gets pretty engaged when he's laughing. And he said, "Otherwise, you know, just fight your way in there. Just get in there." And so I talked to Joe a little bit about the information, and I asked him, "Can I be allowed to sit in on any meeting that you're having? In other words, if I see you're going to be sitting with Ed for an hour, do you mind if I sit in on that meeting?" He said, "No, sit in on any meeting you want. Fine with me. You come into any meeting." And he told the receptionist at the time, he said, "Shelley is allowed in any meeting he wants to. Yeah, he can attend everything. Yeah, fine with me." And in fact, he kind of preferred that. And I've done that with every movie since, Joe. And here's how he thinks about it. Because here's what happened on Jurassic. When he's in prep, for him, that's his time with the production designer. The designer is, that's when most of the designer's work is done during prep. And he wants to be, you know, working closely with the designer at that point. Once we start shooting, he starts working with me. Up to that point, during prep, you know, the information I get is mostly by eavesdropping, mostly by attending these meetings and hearing what they're talking about and coming up with a plan and the occasional, you know, presenting things to Joe. But a lot of what I'm supposed to gather, I gather myself from Joe, but as he's talking to other people, if that makes sense. That's the dynamic with him. And which is great. So, because I can hear about how the, you know, I get to know the genesis of an idea.
So you go from TV movies to DP of the third film in a very successful franchise. Were you talking to previous DPs, like from Jurassic Park and The Lost World, like looking for tips or ideas or help?
I wanted to speak to either Dean or Janusz or both if I could before shooting. And Dean was out of the country and not reachable, but Janusz was. And Janusz had shot Schindler's List, of course, and he was doing AI for Steven at the time. So he took my phone call and I said, I was in prep. I said, hey, I just wanted to ask you some questions. I was over at Stan Winston's place and I saw some of their maquettes and some of their paint that they're going to put on the Raptors. And I wanted to ask if you had to do anything special with the skin or the colors. Is there anything, you know, that I should know regarding the Raptors? And he stopped me mid-sentence and said, okay, stop. He said, you don't need to worry about any of that. All you have to do is give these dinosaurs a world they can live in. Don't get stuck on all this weird technical stuff, because you've got people there who are going to take care of it, and they're going to make them look great. You concentrate on giving them a world. And I thought, oh man, that is probably the best advice I could have asked for. Yeah, and that totally turned me around, because I was kind of falling into the trap, you know, of focusing on the wrong thing. You be just as good as you are at your job as they are at theirs, and you'll be fine.
My name is Doug Meerdink. I worked as an art director on Jurassic Park 3. The job of an art director is to oversee and help manage anything designed or seen in the film, including securing locations and designing vehicles, props, sets, graphics.
How did you get involved? Was this a familiar crew? Did they just call you on because you worked with them previously?
My link to Jurassic Park 3 was a relationship I had with and have to this day with Ed Vareau, who is the production designer. So I met Ed on Contact and worked with him a few times in between that and the start of Jurassic Park 3.
When you look back on the pre-production of the film, what are some memories that stand out to you? I've heard it a few times that the script made things a bit interesting and quite memorable.
Well, there were a few that sort of that stand out, and it's hard to believe it's been 20 years. Some of it feels as fresh as, you know, a week ago. But one was we were in the process of designing the film without a complete script. And so oftentimes what happens is, and the production was looking for a new writing team to kind of help flesh out the story more. In that instance, there's a reliance or there's sort of a opportunity for the art department to help guide the story. So we're essentially designing sets. And then as writers come on, they know sort of the world that we're building for them to play in. And on Jurassic Park 3, that was definitely the case.
Okay, Shelley, so being new to big budget films, was it a constant struggle to not have a finished script?
Yeah. This is frustrating Joe quite a lot during prep. He was never super satisfied with where the script was. And so a lot of, he was, even though we were moving ahead on these set pieces and these sequences that we knew were going to exist, we didn't know how it was going to fit into the story. And Joe was never really that successful in getting, you know, a writer to kind of see his vision. There were a number of writers on it.
Clearly there were issues with the script, but it just seems like the studio was so set on a release date. Was the studio just basically saying, we need it to come out this day and that's it, there's no changing it?
They had to make the film, you know, unless the whole thing just went down in flames. You know, they had a release date to make. They had Sam Neill who I think was locked into dates, and, you know, they had to do something.
There was this ticking clock. There was this sign up on the side of the studio that said, July 18th, 2001, JP3. Hi, I'm David Streit. I am the first unit production manager of Jurassic Park 3, and I shared the title with my friend David Womark, who took over when I left.
Can you tell us briefly what a production manager does? Because I'm sure a lot of people have no idea, including me.
A production manager is a person who, he's a member of the DGA, the Directors Guild. And the Directors Guild brought production managers into their union because they actually facilitate what the director wants.
So you were right in the middle of all these script issues with this deadline approaching. I'm sure you were hearing about all of it. What's your take on this?
The script was there. It was written, you know, you could see what it was. It was pretty much the same, but there was nuance to it, and there was that needed to be done. And that what really needed to be done was it had to be approved by Steven. No script was going to get made unless Steven approved it. And Steven was on another project. I forget what it was. We needed to shoot. We were going to start shooting in July. So there was about a year between the first day of shooting and the delivery of to the theater. But we were going to get Steven's blessing beforehand. And I went on in June, when he was finally available to read it, he said, no, needs to have a rewrite. The powers that be went off and got a couple of writers that they really liked, and said, you've got a month to pull this thing together. And we took the show, and we put it on the preparation, and we put it on hiatus for 5 weeks.
This 1 month draft, which is fast by rewrite standards. Normally when a writer rewrites a script, it might take a year, you know, 6 months minimum. And so the fact that they could turn this around in a month was pretty astounding.
On the next episode.
You know, I just remember when I got hired, you know, normally they give me a script, whether it be a rough script or not, but they give me a script, and 99% of the time it's about 25 or 30 pages too long. On this particular movie, there was no script, so they gave me like a 4-page beat sheet of what, just one line, this would happen, then that could happen, and then this might happen, and then they would do this, and then it could be this, and then it could be that, and asked me to give them an idea of how many days it would take to make it. Bigger head.